Hey, everybody, I'm Dennis Prager. This is the Fireside Chat. I have both dogs with me tonight, or this afternoon, or this morning, because every time zone in the world watches this, so it's a little silly for me to refer to the time. Be that as it may, that's, of course, Snoopy. Otto is the better known of the two. For whatever reason, Snoopy, I even say his name and his tail goes up and down. Are you catching that? They don't see it? Oh, God. Snoopy is a Basset Hound, and Otto is an English Bulldog. Anyway, before I begin, I want to remind you that this is a completely spontaneous time. Every Fireside Chat, there are no notes. There's no, what do you call it, when you read off the teleprompter. There's no teleprompter, nothing. You could tell just by that there's no teleprompter. If I had to think of the word teleprompter, it's a good sign. But it is a chance for me to talk to you from my heart and my mind, and I do that each week. I want to tell you that we have something new for you to know about. It's at PragerU.com. It is Otto Socks, which features a very realistic, beautifully cartooned illustration of Otto, the Otto, with his tongue out, Fireside Chat on the bottom, and PragerU. So you should just know about that. It's a really nice thing. And it's very good material, actually. That was my first test. And we also have a PragerU mug with Otto as well. So those of you who are Otto fans, Otto will be very touched to know that this exists and that there are people enjoying him in all sorts of ways. So I'm going to talk to you about a very difficult subject, but I want you to think about this, even if you differ with me. But that's the point is, first of all, if you do differ with me, I salute you for watching, because that's very important. Half of what I read, I don't agree with, just so you should know. Because I want to know what those I don't agree with think. Maybe they have a good argument, or at least it'll make me capable of making my arguments more finely tuned. That's why I studied Russian, by the way. This was at the height of the Cold War when I was at college and graduate school. And I studied Russian not to read Dostoevsky. I never achieved the proficiency to read a novel in Russian. But I was able to read Pravda, the Soviet communist newspaper. And that was my way of reading what the opposition would write. And it was very helpful to me in life. Anyway, I want to throw at you an idea here. Why are many young people seduced by the anti-racism campaign that has taken over the country? As you know by now, I believe that not only is America not racist, of course there are racists who live here, but that doesn't make America racist, let alone systemically racist. I think it's the biggest lie about a nation in modern times. And I have all sorts of proofs. I have an article on the internet 2 weeks ago I wrote, 5 Arguments Against America's Racist. You should take a look at it. It's just a column. It takes little time to read it. The most obvious argument is whenever people point to how racist the country is, overwhelmingly it's about trivia. Uncle Ben's rice is racist. They had to take Uncle Ben. This was an actual black man in the 1930s who people so admired because he was such a good entrepreneur and made good rice. It was called Uncle Ben's rice. Why are they taking his picture off? He looks perfectly wonderful. When that is what your battle is, Aunt Jemima, Uncle Ben, the Washington Redskins, do you know that 2 major polls, University of Pennsylvania, I believe, or I think it was University of Pennsylvania, and Washington Post, that I'm certain of, the Washington Post, which has clamored for years to have the Washington football team renamed to drop Redskins, they did a very big poll. They were sure that the results would show that they were right, that Native Americans, American Indians, thought it was racist. 90%, this is the Washington Post poll 2 years ago, 90% of Native Americans don't care. Many of them, I don't remember the percentage, thought it was an honor. There is an Indian reservation in Arizona that has a high school. I forgot the name of the high school, but there's a high school and its name is the Redskins on an Indian reservation. There's nothing racist about Redskin. There's nothing racist about Uncle Ben, about Aunt Jemima. And all of these things prove how little racism there is in America, that you have to concentrate on such trivia. That people were impassioned about the Washington Redskins name or the Cleveland Indians? I'll never forget, somebody called my show, because I've been talking about this for years. One of my favorite calls on my radio show, guy calls me up. Hey, Dennis, so you defend Cleveland Indians? What would you think if a team were named the Jews? I'm a Jew, so he asked me that. So I said, sir, Jews have been looking for fans for 3,000 years. That would be a great moment in Jewish history. Yay, Jews! Jews, go, Jews, go! People don't think clearly. I think it would be awesome if they were a team named the Jews. Or the Hebrews. The Israelites. Whatever name you want to have. It's just mind-blowing that we're living through nonsense, but it's dangerous nonsense, obviously. So why is this anti-racism hysteria? Racism is evil, okay? It's a given. But there isn't systemic racism in this country. And when you have to go to Uncle Ben and the like, and microaggressions, which are not racist, to say there's only one race, the human race, is actually anti-racist. If you think there's only one race, how could you be racist, right? By definition. So why are so many young people, and not just young, but I want to address the young, attracted to this? It is very attractive to think that you are doing good. It makes you feel good. That makes perfect sense. So when there's a cause that sounds good, and anti-racism is good, there's no way around it. So this has been the appeal of left-wing movements since communism. Hey, the communists said, we're against fascism. Who's not against fascism? If you're a good person, you're against fascism. But the movement that was against fascism, theoretically, called communism, was evil. It slaughtered way more people than fascism. You don't learn about that stuff, about Mao and about Stalin and about Pol Pot. You don't learn about that stuff, unfortunately, in schools. We have a very important video up at PragerU. Why don't people hate communism as much as Nazism? It's worth devoting 5 minutes to watching that. So people are seduced because there's something inherently wonderful about being anti-racist. But the movement itself is a terrible movement. And it is undoing the greatest country ever made. And I don't say it because I'm American. There's proof. This is the country most people in the world would want to move to more than any other. Poll after poll. And by the way, I want to remind you, I have told you over and over, 2 million black Africans have moved to the United States in the last 20 years. I kept saying 50 years. It's 20 years. 2 million black Africans. But I didn't know this until I looked it up. Another 1 million blacks have moved to the U.S. from the Caribbean. Why would these people move to a systemically racist country? Are any Jews moving to Iran? I mean, think about the absurdity. What, are they all stupid? You're moving to America? That's a systemically racist place. Did you see Uncle Ben? Right? This is... And they do well. They do very well when they move here. Nigerians do better than whites. Statistically, in terms of income, Nigerians, that's a West African country, major country in West Africa, do better in the U.S. than whites do. Japanese Americans were in internment camps under Franklin Roosevelt, a Democrat, I might add, and they do better than whites. If you work hard, this is called a microaggression. If you work hard, don't have children before you get married, you will succeed. Why is that racist? It's like saying 2 and 2 is 4 is racist, which, by the way, eventually will be said. So the appeal, I'm fighting a good cause. You're fighting against America. You're not fighting racism. You're fighting America. And America is a good place. It's not a perfect place. It's composed of humans, and every human is flawed. But it's really done a lot of good. How's our man?
Good.
He is really relaxed. Nathan, can you hear him? Somewhat. Otto, what are you dreaming about? Sometimes he does dream, and he gets very animated, and he sort of talks, and I always wonder, what is he dreaming? Did he, like, see a beautiful female bulldog? I have no idea. Is he thinking about a bone? What do dogs think about when they have happy thoughts? So it's all very appealing, but, you know, in a good country, the thing that you could do that's best, this is the best thing most people in the country could do, is what America was founded to teach people to do. First, you take care of yourself. Second, you take care of your family. And third, you take care of your community. But that's not as exciting as demonstrating against the police. It's not as exciting as tearing down statues. But good is not exciting. Good is fulfilling. But it's not as exciting as bad stuff. It's one of the appeals of bad. There's a lot more adrenaline, and adrenaline feels good. Adrenaline exists far more in doing bad than in doing good. What I just said doesn't sound exciting. I'm going to take care of myself, my family, and my community. But it's very fulfilling, and it accomplishes a lot. You want to do good? Get married and raise good people. There's nothing better most humans can do on this earth than raise good children to be good adults. That's the best thing we can all do. Okay, let's go to your video question and then other questions that you send. And now the video question of the week.
Hi, my name is Prudence Cox. I'm 18 and I am a Prayer Force member from Frederick, Maryland. A lot of kids my age do not care about politics or what's going on in the world. What are some tips of getting them to realize the importance of being aware and involved?
That is one tough question. I'm torn, Prudence, believe it or not. I think that when you're 18, just to use your age, the ideal is to learn about life, learn wisdom, and learn how to be a good human being. To learn to fight the worst parts of yourself, everybody has to do that. I'm not a big fan, generally speaking, of activism at a very young age. I want you to be active in your community and in your school and to do good things. But this notion that you have to be part of some gigantic cause, I mean, if there is some tremendous evil, yes, you're right, but America doesn't have a tremendous evil to battle. It's a good country. However, the irony is because there is this anti-American force of the left, not of liberals, but of the left, I guess I do want you to get involved. That's why we have Prager Force. And how do you convince one of your peers, tell them, just, I guess first you have to make the case that, you know, we're very lucky to be American and to live in America. Don't take this for granted. This could be torn down. And we, the young people, will be stuck with a future with little freedom, massive controls on our life by an ever-expanding government, and a debt that we will make it impossible for us to accumulate our own wealth. And I don't mean $1 billion wealth. I mean just wealth so that you could be independent. You know, your generation clamors for free college and free housing, and oh, not just your generation, the whole left does. Who's going to pay for it? The rich? How much money do you think the rich have? If you took all the money from Bill Gates and Jeff Bezos and the other many times over billionaires, you could not pay for all this. We're talking about trillions of dollars in debt. These people don't have trillions of dollars. I don't know the number, but if you added up all the money in the top 100 richest people in America, let's say you would get, I don't think you would get to $1 trillion, but let's say you did. We're $20 trillion in debt. How will that be paid? And you want more free things? Anyway, the other thing you should do is show them PragerU videos. And I know that sounds, it doesn't sound funny. And I don't know what it sounds like, but that's why we make them. So as to make people aware, especially of your age, and most of the people who view us are under 35, of what the big issues of life are. When I was your age, I thought that, first of all, I did always think I was lucky to be an American. And there was anti-Semitism in America. There always has been. But I would never have called America systemically anti-Semitic. I mean, in the 1930s, Harvard had a public ban on too many Jews attending Harvard. Country clubs did not allow Jews in. Law firms did not allow Jews in. And yet my father, who lived through all of that, thought he was the luckiest Jew in the world to live in the United States, and he was. You're the luckiest Black if you live in the United States. You're the luckiest Jew. You're the luckiest, just fill in the ethnicity. That's the truth. We're being buried in lies. You know why? People need meaning in their lives, and this gives them meaning. But when I was 18, I was saying, I thought, gee, what will give me meaning? I had a deep belief, and still do, in God and in my faith, Judaism. And that gave me tremendous amount of meaning. A lot of you were raised secular, and so you have to find a substitute for religion to fill the gap or the hole that's been left by the collapse of Christianity for most of you. I also thought that I had to eventually get married and have a family and take care of them. That filled me with a lot of meaning. And it is. It's very meaningful to feel, in my case as a man, I need to take care of a family, filled me with a sense of worth. Okay. What's our timing here?
19.
Good. Abigail, a PragerU student from Walla Walla Community College in Washington State. I just suddenly lost my father and wanted to know how we can best cope with this difficult time as a family. Well, first of all, my heart goes out to you. It's a very, very early age to lose a parent. You're just in high school or college. It's a terrible loss. The first thing is you have to grieve. You can't, I'm not going to tell you anything that undoes the tragedy of your father's death. It is a tragedy, end of issue. I you know, I'll never forget, I spoke at a dear friend's memorial service, who's a Christian. I was the only non-Christian to be speaking at the service. And everybody who spoke, and they spoke beautifully, was saying that he, the deceased, was in a better place because of the belief in heaven, which I have too, and the afterlife. But I got up because I always believe in being real. And I looked at his widow, and I said, Frank, is in a better place, but you're not. If you're a believer and believe that your dad is in a better place, that's comforting. But the fact is that we on earth are not in a better place when we lose a loved one. We're in a worse place. So I'm not going to tell you anything that denies how tragic the loss is. However, I can tell you with the same degree of realness that I just spoke the last words, with which I just spoke the last words. You obviously loved your dad, and I say obviously because you wouldn't have written this, I don't think, if you didn't. Over time, you will realize how lucky you were to have a dad you loved and who presumably loved you. So, to a certain extent, you will be able to say, I was lucky to have such a father, and it's a big tragedy that he went so early, but I'm in a better place than a lot of people whose relations with their father are terribly strained or hostile or non-existent. It's all perspective. You were lucky to have your dad for the, let's say you're 18, the 18 years you had him. A lot of people don't have a dad for 18 years. A lot of people have a dad who's awful for 18 years. It doesn't make it feel better, but it does put it in perspective. You had something terrific, and that should breed gratitude. I had this wonderful dad for this number of years. But I do believe you have to have a time of grieving. You can't go back to normal immediately. And over time, you will carry that memory of this wonderful man. I presume was wonderful, or again, you wouldn't have asked this. And you now have to help your mom, whose loss is in some ways greater than yours. It's because she lost her partner. You didn't lose your partner, you lost your dad. And the loss of a life partner is a terrible loss. So my heart goes out to all of you, and especially your mother, on the assumption, because you wrote your family grieving, I assume they were intact. Okay. Maybe name a son that you will have, hopefully, one day after your dad. Okay, John, 60, Lake Forest, California. Do you ever feel your passions are burdensome? In other words, do you ever think to yourself, life would be much easier if I didn't care so much about so many things? Yeah, I think about that all the time. But I've never believed that the purpose of life was to have it easy. So it therefore doesn't play a negative role in my life. That's why I gave my fireside chat on safety. The purpose of life is not to be safe. The purpose of life is not to have it easy. The purpose of life is to lead a fulfilling life and do as much good that you can, as you can. So, yeah, of course, if I didn't care it would be easier. So what would I care about then? You know, sports and movies? I'm not knocking it. They have their role in life, sports and movies. But sports and movies are diversions. They can't be the essence of my passion. Okay, Peter, 37, Copenhagen, Denmark. Hi, Dennis. Hello, Peter. I have watched all, he capitalized all, your fireside chats. Gives me a certain joy to know that you're sitting in Copenhagen and I'm sitting in California and you watch me every week. I'm very touched by it. You are the first one who talked to me about marriage. That means a lot to me. That's right. You know the number of men whose wives have told me or they have told me, you know, got to tell you, Dennis, because of you, my husband married me. I get that a lot because men know I'm a man's man. I am. I'm a masculine man. Now, for those of you who don't give a damn about masculinity, it's not a boast, is it? But I know I am. And you should know you are. Men should aspire to be masculine. It's a very good thing to aspire to. We are not women. Women should aspire to femininity. But of course, that's a put down. I don't exactly know why that's a put down. It's a compliment. But anyway, so men listen to me. And they don't have many masculine models anymore. When I did, I had my father and my uncles and my teachers. These were all masculine males and movie figures. They're tearing down John Wayne because he said some awful things. John Wayne, people didn't know the awful things he said. That's not what he was known for. He was known for being a powerful male. That's a very good thing for boys to have. Anyway, it was just a thought on, yes, you're happy I've talked to you about marriage because you don't hear it much. Then he has another thing. My question is a lighter one. Who would win in an arm wrestle, you or Ben Shapiro? I don't know. I can only tell you I'm 6'4", 265 pounds. And I lift weights. So I can't, I'm not commenting. Obviously, I don't know, you know, what Ben is doing physically, but I'm a big guy and a strong guy. But that would be very funny. I'll tell Ben that somebody in Denmark was curious about this. Okie dokie. Evan, 35, Kirkland, Washington. Hi there, Dennis. Yep. Longtime viewer of your fireside chats. I showed someone your Prager University video about free speech on college campuses, but they suggested that it's fine for colleges to restrict free speech as long as they're private colleges like Stanford or Harvard. What are your thoughts on this? Your friend is confusing fine with legal. It is legal to suppress free speech in private colleges, but it isn't fine. Life consists of a huge diversion between the legal and the good. There are so many terrible things you could do that are legal. Right? It's just the way it is in life. Not every bad thing is illegal. You could be a miserable, mean, cruel, rotten person and not violate any law. Colleges that suppress free speech are despicable. And you shouldn't spend 10 cents to send your child there. Because they're not being taught, they're being indoctrinated. So yeah, it's legal. But it isn't fine. How are we? 29. Well, next one is from Lithuania. What do I do?
Next week will be Lithuania.
Next week we will talk to Gabia, a 16-year-old in Vilnius. I visited Vilnius, had a great time in the Baltic states. Well, my friends, don't forget the Otto socks and mug. And it is a joy to be with you. I'm Dennis Prager, and I'll see you next week. Thank you for watching. If you'd like to keep these fireside chats free, please do by donating to PragerU.